Hello and welcome back to Transmission. Today, Q is joined by a returning guest, James Johnston from Piklo. In this conversation, you'll hear how Piklo has scaled to a global flexibility marketplace with 1 gigawatt of assets across 50 US states and over 30 gigawatts in the UK. James introduces Project ACE, a new model where data centers fund local virtual power plants to fast-track their own grid connections. And he explains why scaling flexibility will fundamentally solve the energy trilemma, regardless of politics, by addressing the missing money problem that's been holding back grid investment. Want the latest news, analysis, and price indices from power markets around the globe delivered to your inbox every week? Subscribe to the Weekly Dispatch, Modo Energy's email newsletter. Now, let's jump in.
Hello, James. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Well, actually, welcome back to the podcast. We figured out it's been almost 200 episodes since you came on. I think you were our fifth guest back 3 and a bit years ago, before when we were the Modo Energy podcast, before Transmission, before all of this. So firstly, a very warm welcome back to the podcast. And a lot has happened in that time. So I guess I've got to ask you, what's new at Piklo? What's happened since we last spoke?
Goy, what has happened in the last 3 years? What a nasty question to start with. you know, in the startup world, it's more like dog years, right?
Yeah.
So that's like 15 or 25 startup years, right? So, shortlist. We've scaled internationally. We've transformed our entire marketplace away from a building a bespoke setup every time we have a new client to having an open marketplace shared worldwide. We're really innovating alongside the next big thing in the sector, which is obviously how do we connect all these data centers to the grid.
I want to ask you about that in a second, but before we get there, when you were first on the podcast, I think you just set up in Italy and you were talking about global expansion, but it hadn't really happened yet. Nothing disparaging, just it takes some time. So what's the Piklo experience been like internationally?
Yeah, I think what is self-evident is the energy sector is so regional. Every country or every state is its own little empire, it's got its own ecosystem of rules, players, ways of working, and there isn't really a concept of a global energy market. And that's the approach that we're taking of like, how can we have a single approach, a single platform that can scale literally everywhere? And that obviously doesn't come without challenges. Really the idea is on the technology side, the platform that is a single approach, but then on how we implement it and how we work with local partners, that then is customized. So is that kind of marrying together of, designing for the local setup and having that common platform is what works.
It's so hard to do, isn't it? Did you do an MBA? I didn't do one, but in America, I find a lot more people have done MBAs. Mm. And I had someone, I was at dinner and they'd gone to kind of Yale Business School or something like that. And they were saying that at business school, they teach this idea about hyper-local markets, right? So if you run a business and you want to scale, they tell you at business school not to scale into hyper-local markets. And what that means is famously restaurant businesses. Once you get it to like 5 restaurants, 10 restaurants, the founder, CEO can manage those restaurants. You can hire good general managers. You know where the right locations are. You can do quality control. Even the cleaners know your name. Mm-hmm. And then once you get beyond like 10 restaurants to 50 restaurants, and you've seen this in lots of casual dining restaurants in the UK, the quality control drops off and you can't manage them in the same way. And it's because they're hyper-local and you need lots of local talent. Mm. And I always think about our business as a bit, Modo Energy is a bit like that, right? Business school will tell you not to do it because you have to be, we sell a trust product and you have to be ahead of the curve of the power markets in so many hyper-local markets. It's just such an execution challenge to get the right people in the right seats, right? Mm. But in your case, I guess there's probably more of what you can do that is global than us, because we have to build models and apply models in each region, and each region's got different inputs and it's incredibly complicated. But my thinking is that on the market side, in the marketplace, you can do more centralized. Is that right?
I think we have very similar challenges, but just completely different. So the fundamental challenge for building a marketplace is the chicken and egg problem or the cold start problem. Like if you don't have all the buyers there, the sellers won't turn up. The buyers don't turn up if the sellers are not there. And that is the defining problem for any marketplace business. And then you layer in the fact that it's a heavily regulated space. I believe it's the most regulated sector apart from nuclear power, you know, grids and energy retail and et cetera. It's like highly prescriptive. There's not much room for real innovation, but it's compared to, you know, other sectors. So it's, you layer that in with the cold start problem and it's fiendishly difficult to build what we're doing. And, yeah, I don't know why I do it sometimes.
Well, I guess if you had to listen to everything they tell you at business school, then business would be boring. But it's challenging. I mean, I imagine a lot of the mechanics, a bit like us, we can build centralized models and then we think about each region as the last mile, a bit like last mile delivery. Mm. I assume that there's a lot of central technology that you build and then you can apply that to regions.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think what's different is we have a single global platform. You know, there are regional differences in terms of like data residency rules. Obviously you're familiar with the European setup. There's a different setup in Australia, for example. And then we have a set of modules. So if you are, let's say, a utility and you want to procure via our platform, you use the procurement module. If you want to then connect your DERMS system and dispatch, or you know, settle via the platform, you can also use that functionality. So it's quite a modular capability. I think what is interesting is there's a greater difference between what individual customers decide to use on the platform in the same region than between regions. So it's quite a flexible, setup. But then it's all about the playbooks. A big strength of ours is how do we, you know, grow liquidity? How do we, you know, get this out in front of VPPs, flexibility providers? How do we take the learnings from the years of scaling this up in the UK and elsewhere and say, well, you know, these are the five things that you need to get right when you design this market. This is the one contract term that you should avoid or add in. This is how you need to do baselining. And take those learnings and wrap it into a kind of playbook and then coach our local teams, whether they're in the US or Australia or in Southern Europe, to then have that baseline knowledge that then they make their own. Because there'll be some nuance in the market that we didn't understand, and that's where the local knowledge comes in.
And so how many regions are you in now?
So we characterize it as the UK and then Europe, whether that's two regions, maybe beyond the beyond the point, then there's North America and Australia. But the next wave of development on our platform is it's a self-service marketplace. And actually anyone can create an account anywhere. Much more akin to a digital, you know, service or an internet company rather than an energy company. Of like anyone in the world can set up and sort of start placing orders or showcasing the available flex that they have. And you know, we just enable them to, you know, find the right counterparties and kind of breaking down the barriers of, you know, are you in, you know, ERCOT market? Are you in the GB market? Are you in France? It's more like, it's just, you know, wherever you want to, you know, find a counterparty and find a trade and undertake it, that's possible now.
Quick break. If you listen to this show, then you probably work in energy. And at Modo Energy, we're not just talking about the energy transition. We help our users to actually make it happen. All energy storage, solar, and wind assets on the global balance sheet need to be valued and benchmarked. And that's where Modo Energy comes in. Our benchmarks and forecasts are transparent, bankable, and trusted by the world's leading banks, asset managers, utilities, and developers. So if you want to learn more, go to modoenergy.com. And if you want more content like this, sign up to our weekly dispatch newsletter. Enjoy the conversation. So I want to ask you about the journey with Piqlo, because you've been Mr. Piqlo for 13 years or so, right? And the Piclo has evolved over time. Originally, you were more of a marketplace business, and then you saw an opportunity in distributed flex and enabling that. And now you're adding back in the marketplace part. What's that been like as a journey?
I think one thing I really believe that you have to, in order to innovate, you have to be willing to sort of disrupt yourself. And stay ahead of the narrative rather than following other people's narratives, like create that narrative and set the stall out. So we're always been pioneering in this space, and we got it wrong sometimes. You know, that's also a key point. Like the key thing that we've got wrong in the past has been too early, rather than having the wrong idea, but just like 5 years too early, and it might as well be, you know, the wrong idea. And that was very much the case with our peer-to-peer energy trading piece. You know, we were one of the first pioneers of 24/7 REGOs, that
this
whole
is the
model.
First utility days.
The open utility.
Open utility days, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's now starting to take off, as you know, there's lots of players in the space, and I think that's great. So we learned from that, like, you can have a great idea, but if you're too early, you know, it's game over. And where we saw the sort of where the market was moving in the UK on the grid level, the distribution level, was this emergent use of flexibility to manage, you know, deferring investments into the grid, or, you know, manage power flows more generally. And this was kind of like a greenfield space. Like, these organizations had never really procured flexibility in any scale before. So we're open to new ideas and using a marketplace, etc. So that was us getting really hyper focused on solving that, you know, specific problem of, you know, helping create liquidity for DSO flexibility markets. And that remains a really important, you know, scaling journey for our business. So, you know, especially with some, you know, the upcoming regulatory changes in Europe, you know, every DSO in Europe is going to need some sort of platform or marketplace to help them, you know, manage the grid more effectively. So that is great. Now, what we have also then, as we've got more and more international and as we start scaling into the US, realized that we can simplify this proposition. Rather than making it hyper focused on one use case, how can we generalize the marketplace concept so that anyone who is looking to buy and sell any kind of contractual flexibility product, whether they're a TSO and ancillary services, or a DSO, or utility with a utility program, or even an energy trader or retailer, or in fact data center organizations, they all need the same types of, you know, workflows. Like, they need to qualify or, you know, assess the capabilities of the counterparty. Are they reliable? Do they have the right technology? Is it located in the right relevant place? What's the kind of price, you know, price finding? So whether it's an auction or other mechanisms, settling on the contract, delivery of the service, whether that's scheduled in advance or, you know, a real-time signal. And then verifying, because flexibility is always very complex. You need to, was that flexibility delivered, is a really easy question, hard to answer. And so the whole measurement, verification, settlement thing, these are all ultimately payments. These are the same workflows for all these different use cases. And that's how we start simplifying this down. And the other key simplification that we're going to be launching later this year is, right now, there are different account types, whether you're a buyer organization or a seller, a utility or a flex provider. We're seeing the emergence of, you know, buyers and sellers, or organizations doing both buying and selling. So we're going to simplify that down into, you just have an account type and you can buy or sell as an, you know, action on the marketplace. So it feels very refreshing to simplify a product. It's much easier said than done, but like with all these learnings, that's the direction of travel.
I find it deeply gratifying to cut bits of product or to simplify our product, especially when you've got bits where you can see users aren't using it very much. And every time you simplify, it means you can spend more time and effort building in other areas which users really care about. So, yeah. All right, let's talk about this data center thing. Mm. So, big announcement from Piclo, all very exciting. Take it from the top. What's going on with Piklo and data centers?
Well, so the acronym we want everyone to be talking about is ACE. Accelerated Community Energy. And
Accelerated Community Energy.
Yeah.
Well, Accelerated. We'll have to do some, we'll drop in.
Accelerated Community Energy. This is, I think, a transformational concept. It's so simple in its basic premise, which is, you know, in the US, for example, McKinsey, you know, forecasts $1 trillion to be invested in data center facilities over the next 4 years. A big T, you know, that's a lot of money. Problem is, as you know, that everyone's stuck in a queue to get connected. So that money is not being able to be spent right now. And there's, you know, how do we get there? So then the other...
I actually think if the queue, just to jump in there,
yeah.
If the queue wasn't such a mess, that one T would be a much bigger trillion.
Yeah, I mean, with recent announcements with, you know, OpenAI and NVIDIA, like, you know, that's just kicking off the race for the next wave of, you know, money. And
yeah, I think the constraining issue is the grid connection, not the capital. I think people would, yeah, I think the hyperscalers would spend the money to build faster.
Yeah.
They could get time to power.
Yeah. And then on the other equation, you've got an affordability crisis, of, you know, the cost of energy going up, and essentially there is a challenge, you know, the fundamental challenge on the public network is how can you argue to increase rates by, you know, investing in, you know, flexibility. So flexibility is the inherent solution to all of this, but there's a missing money problem on the public network because of the increased scrutiny of how, you know, how can we, you know, spend, you know, ratepayers' dollars. You know, and just examples like, you know, all around the US, you know, California quite recently with DSGS programs being canceled because there's budget cuts. So you add these two things together, you've got $1 trillion of capital that can't be spent by the private sector, and you've got a public sector that knows flexibility, the public networks, knows flexibility as a solution, but cannot access that money. So the idea is very simple. How can we sort of, you know, shift some of that capital from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. And so the concept here is the large load that's connecting, the data center company, they allocate circa 3% of their investment in building infrastructure, essentially subsidizing out virtual power plants on the local utility grid. So the money comes from the private sector, but then these assets are essentially then, you know, exactly to determine what would be useful for the utility. But they get essentially control over these assets or over a period of time. And what's really interesting about this 3% figure is that's what we estimate would get you $75-$80 kilowatt years for 5 years as an incentive to cover 100% of the maximum demand of a data center. So it becomes quite an attractive incentive.
So just so I've got this right, just to play it back to you. So the data center folks have got $1 trillion to spend.
Yeah.
But there's a problem on the grid in that we need loads more flexibility, especially if you're going to connect all these data centers.
Yeah.
But it's a highly political issue because it's now like a price of X problem in the US.
Yeah.
So the solution is the data center owner, the person who's spending the capex, they're going to subsidize and pay for the flexibility elsewhere on the network, but receive the net benefit by being able to connect and being online, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So to kind of paint a picture, so let's say it's a 100 megawatt data center that cost about $1.3 billion, give or take, you know, allocating 3% of that, around about $40 million. Now, if that $40 million was then, you know, kind of like a capacity market thing, it was like then allocated, you know, Piklo would run an auction, so you get the best price, and VPPs bid in and get their allocation of that. You're talking at a, you know, ballpark of, you know, that $75, you know, for kilowatt year for a 5 year contract. So quite a chunky bit of revenue.
Oh, the flexibility provider, they're the ones who get $75-$80 per kilowatt per year over a longer period.
Yeah.
Okay, so they can actually start thinking, they can either invest in a new asset or they can upgrade an existing asset. Or yeah, okay, got you.
Yeah, so that then stimulates and creates new additional flexibility that wasn't necessarily going to come.
That's a lot though, right? $80,000 a megawatt, or $80 a kilowatt. Jumping
this
around
is
here.
Why the numbers kind
this
of
is kind. That's a lot.
This is what I'm
you
saying.
You can do a lot with $80,000 a kilowatt.
Megawatt. And the kicker is, the return on investment for a data center is 2 months. If they connect to the grid 2 months faster than they would have without doing this mechanism, they would return on investment. Because there's another metric for you here, which is I think the average revenue for a data center operator per kilowatt, because they measure data centers in kilowatts and megawatts these days, is $180 per kilowatt month. So basically for this 100 megawatt scale data center, that's about, almost $20 million a month of lost revenue every month there's not getting energized. And therefore it pays itself from this private capital back. There's a really compelling reason for them to do this if it speeds up that connection by 2 months or more. And if we're talking about someone in a 5-year queue getting, this is actually very significant for them. And then the money's highly significant for the flexibility market. So it's quite compelling in all senses.
What are you going to do about the locational impact though, right? So flexibility in some locations is worth more. Why am I telling you? You're the Piclo guy. You know this more than anyone.
Exactly.
Flexibility in some locations.
We have a solution for that.
Worth more than different locations. Yeah, so what does that look like?
So this is a classic example of what we're just talking about before. Like, we have the platform. We can do this today. Like, everything I've just mentioned, we're ready to go. We need local partners, whether these are, the data center operators, their investors, and utilities, to have a dialogue around what this means for them. So if the constraining factor of getting energized is a transmission constraint, then in theory, anywhere on the utility network, as long as, behind that constraint, it doesn't matter. But then they might go, well, actually, also we have some congestion issues here. If you're giving me this free asset anyway, can you make sure you prioritize different areas? So I do think this is going to be a sort of partnership dialogue with the utility in terms of what they want to see. But what's really interesting is this is already happening, both in terms of data center operators are setting bilateral arrangements with, ad hoc flex providers, and of course, utilities are, running programs to get more flex on the grid. But what we're talking about here is systemizing this, so scaling this up so it can scale up to enable that full trillion.
And if the utilities don't move, right? There's a lot of private wires going in, and data center developers are starting to think about off-grid as certainly a short and medium-term solution while the grid catches up. And so you think, as a utility, they also want these data centers to connect, right? They want more load as well. I know everyone complains about it, but they want more load. So you think they've got a pretty good incentive to do this too.
Absolutely. I think in theory, if you're adding, if you're consuming or making more use of the existing network and you're not adding to the peaks because you've got the flexibility to soften those peaks, the rate charge for everyone should in theory go down. Because you're using the same level of infrastructure with more utilization. So it can be a good thing. And I think the other piece I haven't mentioned, which is super important, is community buy-in. Now, I think data centers are becoming quite unpopular with the general population. Yes, they like the benefits of AI, but they don't want a big, stonking data center in their backyard. But what happens if they were given a free battery that then made them resilient and gave them a little extra income stream? That might change their mind.
Some of them don't like batteries either, though. That's the problem, James.
Yeah.
They're turned on batteries as well. They want them emojis, but they don't want the data centers and the batteries.
But then the one thing they can probably get behind is lower cost electricity.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. 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 Okay, cool. So where first?
So we're going to be catalyzing, a number of partners across the US and also in the UK to try and establish a proof of concept here. We're talking about proof of concept in the data center world. This is going to be pretty big. And also, we're going to do it very quickly. So this is not a utility pilot This is a, you know, data center AI industry project. And yeah, we'll have a few things to announce shortly, but you know, we're hoping to, you know, demonstrate the concept this final quarter of the year.
Awesome. Where did the idea come from? Was it, how do we, these data center things are creating problems for the grid, how do we use our technology to solve that? Or did you speak to a data center developer or owner and they said, hey, Piccolo, you got to fix this?
We've been exploring the concept of data center flexibility for over a year. I did forecast that there was going to be a big discussion around flexible compute and on-site flexibility, and that's going to be part of the equation here as well, of course. And I was almost on the point around waiting for timing, kind of realizing that the industry needs to catch up a little bit here. And I think right now is the point, you know, here in New York and Climate Week, pretty much every conversation I've had has been around the points I've just mentioned, the missing money problem, how do we scale up VPPs, how do we connect large loads? This is the topic of the day. And I think 6 months ago, I don't think this was quite on everyone's radar, but I think it's hit home. So for me, it's like, you know, we've had this idea for a while. It's just now's the time to actually catalyze it.
All right, let's go back to classic Piccolo. You're scaling across the US right now. How's that been for you as one European company that is doing the same thing in the US, roughly around the same time? I think we both started off in the US in the last couple of years. How have you found scaling across the US?
I think the first point was we found a great first partner in National Grid. And I think the fact that they're a British company as well, as they kind of very exposed to the emerging DSO model and very, you know, open-minded working with a company at that point hadn't been proven elsewhere in the US. So that was all, you know, really, you're lucky to find a great first partner. And then building off of the early successes there, we've then started scaling first, you know, relatively slowly into some neighboring states, Connecticut. We've got a really amazing project there, now in Massachusetts. And then this summer, we started this open marketplace approach. And how we're doing this is the recognition of like flexibility markets and flexibility programs, demand response programs are kind of invisible. You know, every utility website in various different forms may, you know, describes what they're doing, but there's no consistent, you know, language or place to go to find out this stuff. Maybe some consultancies would do this for you. So we thought, well, you know, if we want to sort of be the open marketplace, you want to go in there and find everything. So we started the journey of essentially cataloging or indexing every single utility, every single demand response program, first of all in the US, and now we're scaling this across the world, using AI, of course, to help us do that effectively. And so that has really brought to life the marketplace. You can go onto piccolo.com, you can go into state of your choice or country of your choice and just go and explore what's going on. You know, that has then helped convince the other side of the equation, the VPP, the aggregators, to go, right, well, I'm going to now upload my entire nationwide portfolio of assets. And we now have 1 gigawatt of registered assets across 50 states.
Congrats. That's a big number.
I know. It's pretty exciting. And this is just the beginning. You know, we have over 30 gigawatts in the UK. So like there's a lot more to go here. And so then you start creating, you know, conversation around matching. I've got assets. There's this program here. How can we start matching these two things together? And so that's the really exciting thing around this new open marketplace. It's, yes, we continue to have enterprise arrangements with utilities that decide to use the full set of functionality on the platform, or, you know, outsource to procurement or, you know, run the end-to-end market on us. But we now have this lightweight approach where any utility in the world can claim their free account and then start to manage their opportunity listings, get aggregate insights, and start to get value from the platform with very low barriers. And this is all coming back to what I mentioned earlier. This is all in the name of helping kind of break down that chicken and egg problem. Now we have a marketplace where actually both sides, the buy side and the sell side, are actually quite richly populated. And now the focus for us is like enabling trades to happen, whether it's sellers saying, I've got, you know, this kind of offer available, who wants to, you know, buy this, or buyers say, you know, connecting, essentially helping recruit into utility programs. And then the data center angle with Project ACE, then, you know, can supercharge all of this. Then you've got money flowing in, the, you know, more opportunity for sellers, more fulfillments from the utility side. And that sort of then just catalyzes this as well, which is great.
All right. A gigawatt across 50 states.
Yeah.
That's wicked.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's a big moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, James, round two. Round two of your contrarian view. So what do you believe that not a lot of other people believe?
I'm going to be a bit cheeky. And this is like...
Your podcast sucks, Quentin.
Is that
no,
contrarian?
You're not allowed that. Yeah.
Thought this is contrarian views. I think the obvious one is, you know, here in America, the conversation's moved away from decarbonization. And, you know, with the energy trilemma obviously being decarbonization, affordability, and resilience, there's a bit, you know, in our domain, there's a bit more emphasis on the latter two now. Our company mission is to decarbonize the world's grids. And so we've always, and we've always, you know, known that we're solving every aspect of the trilemma. So I think the interesting question I think everyone in this space is now, you know, having is like, what does this mean? Like, are we backtracking from climate? And I think the contrarian view is, it's, you know, and we're here at Climate Week in New York. I think it's almost independent on how much you emphasize your mission statement, or, you know, the language you use when selling to a new client, et cetera. It's more about the actions that you do. And what outcomes does that drive? And so for me, independent of all the branding and, you know, whether, you know, some a phrase is in or out or whatever, fundamentally, if we can scale up flexibility, you know, missing money problem, the visibility issue, getting trades done, if we can scale that up, that's going to solve the energy trilemma. It's going to decarbonize the world's grids. And that's the most important thing. So I don't know if that's a contrarian view, but like it's... That's how I personally see things.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that they're at odds with each other. I think that this just ended up being this way of thinking that is the spread that is that renewables and decarbonization are at odds with cheap power. I don't think that's true. I think the way that you can point to many subsidies and applications of decarbonization programs that have increased costs. But net-net, you have a rapidly decreasing cost base across solar and batteries, and you have a mass electrification of everything that needs to be solved. And we can't keep on burning stuff the way that we are. But the fuel costs for renewables and batteries now, if you go hard at solar and storage, and you become... If you go hard, particularly at solar and storage, there's a case for wind here, but I think the cost situation is very difficult right now. If you go hard at those solid state devices, it's very easy to make an argument that that's the cheapest way to go, and nuclear, of course. But there seems to be some way of thinking that's got everywhere, which is that is at odds with cheap power, but an energy abundance is necessary for electrification and AI and everything else. But I don't know where it's come from. I think it's politics. I think it's nonsense.
This is the one thing, like there is a missing money problem. You know, that is a real problem. That's not a branding issue.
What do you mean? Like missing money where?
There's a reluctance for public subsidies.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Behind, which, you know, which with the IRA existed, you know, in spades, it's been taken away.
Yeah.
There's, you know, and then with the affordability crisis, individual state actors, utilities are really concerned about budgets, et cetera. So like that really exists.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, for us, if we can help solve that problem, that will probably have a much bigger impact on everything, because I think we have all the kind of tools we need. You know, when I go talk to utilities, they know the value of flexibility, but they're kind of stuck in many cases because they need to open up a conversation with the regulator on how they unlock more funding for this. And whilst there's appetite to do that, it draws everything out and it takes a long time. And we don't have much time now for all these different things. So solving that missing money problem, I think, can really flourish flexibility. And then with flexibility, then you can put more renewables on. You can electrify more. You can enable more, as well as build more grid. But build more grid prudently. Don't overbuild. Don't overpromise what you can build, and then actually backtrack when you don't have the permit or, you know, the community buy-in. And so like flexibility is not just this niche part of the sector. I think it is the core of the sector. If we get this right, this is how the whole thing works.
Yeah, agreed. It's funny, it says Climate Week this week, as you mentioned. I've heard so many people at various events say crazy things like climate is dead, blah, 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 right? Mm. So yeah, a load of climate VC got burnt, investing in the wrong things. Investors felt that climate metrics were more important than return on capital metrics, which isn't true because that's a very short-term thinking because then the capital dries up. So there's loads of reasons why people got burnt. Mm. But I don't think climate's dead at all. I just think that companies that made too much of a meal out of the decarbonization thing, as if they weren't companies to make profit as well, I think they've got burnt. Mm. Because there is, like, this only works if you get a return on capital. I mean, our mission at Modo is to make sure that capital gets allocated into the right projects. And we define right as in the ones with the highest return and the best technologies and quality projects. Mm. If we do that, then the outcome of that is decarbonization. And that is one of the biggest impacts we can have. It's like more projects, more batteries, more solar. You know, that is how you actually enact change rather than, you know, slogans on websites. So yeah, so it's a bit taboo to say, but I agree with you. It feels like that we're at some sort of impasse where there's some folks in the climate crowd who have gone so hard, they've been banging on about climate so long at the cost of other things that now they're having to wonder where their place is in the world, right? But I don't think it's dead. I know you didn't say that, but I've heard a few people say, I don't think it's dead. I think there's some rationality back to it, and I think that's a good thing long term.
Yep.
So James, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. I'll come back in another 200 episodes.
It's awesome to have you on again. Yeah, we'll see you at episode 400 or whatever it is. So if you're listening to this and you want to find out more about Piclo and their announcement around data centers and all the incredible work they're doing, we're going to put some links in the show notes so you can head down there and have a look at that. And of course, you can reach out. James, how do they get you? Twitter, LinkedIn?
I'm on LinkedIn. Yeah, you can find me there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks again.
Cheers.